In this very first episode of the Good Dog People podcast, we've invited our friends from VetPal to answer some of the most often asked questions about taking care of your dog. And we asked them to clear up all the misinformation about dogs and the novel coronavirus. All that in this episode of the Good Dog People podcast. Hello and welcome to the first episode of the Good Dog People podcast. My name is Miguel, your co-host for this podcast, and also with me is CEO and founder of Good Dog People, Terry.
Hey guys, hi.
So one way we thought would be a good way to introduce ourselves in this podcast is rather than sort of rattle off our career so far, we just talk straight about the thing that you're interested in, and that's dogs. So my name is Miguel. I'm a parent of three Westies. My oldest is Mac. Mac is going to be 13 years old in August. Then I also have Skye, who just turned 5 at the beginning of March. And Mac and Skye had a baby a couple of years ago named Connor. So now that makes 3. Terry, tell us about your dog.
So I have 2 miniature schnauzers. So Toby is a rescue dog from a pet shop. He's 12 this year. And I have Russ, who was adopted from a family. He's 13. And coincidentally, both of them came from the same shop. So I guess it's meant to be.
Right. So our podcast is going to be all about dogs. And the idea is that every episode we have a guest or guests to talk about, you know, our favorite companions in the world. And that's our dogs. And so we'll try as much as possible to talk about what's happening in the world vis-a-vis the world of dogs. And also a little bit later on in the program, we're going to give you a way to give us some questions so that we can incorporate that into future episodes. Now, of course, Terry, you know that the motto of Good Dog People is dogs, people, and planet. Tell us a little bit more about what that means.
Well, when we first started Good Dog People, it's really meant to be a responsible pet store. And that really means, from a nutrition point of view, from even, you know, down to the toys they play, even, you know, the packaging that we use, it has to be environmental friendly. So that's how we came about this dogs, people, and planet first philosophy.
Right. We have 2 special guests with us today. They are the co-founders of a brand new company called VetPal. First, I'm going to introduce Calvin Tan.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having us.
Calvin, this is a tradition. We're going to start it. Tell us about the dogs in your life.
I had a couple of golden retrievers. Unfortunately, they both passed away 2 months apart in October and December of 2018. They were 2 golden retrievers and they were around 11 years old. Both were brothers adopted from the SPCA.
Wow. That really must hurt, huh?
Yeah, it's not the best introduction, but that's what I've got.
Hey, listen, I always feel like, you know, my thoughts always, and I know it's never really, you know, entirely enough, but I always feel like, you know, when dogs pass away, you know, I like to think of it as just, they've just scouted ahead and we'll catch up with them again someday, so.
I guess so. That's the sentiment that I share.
Right. Okay, and then we have, of course, Camelia Leong, also co-founder of VetPal.
Hi guys, my name is Camelia. I have a miniature schnauzer as well. His name is Seeker and he's 10 this year and I've had him since I graduated. So he's been with me for quite a while.
Right. Okay, so the reason why we wanted to start the episode with, as the name implies, VetPal. We've invited somebody who can represent the veterinary industry and talk about caring for dogs. Now, one of the challenges, of course, with having dogs is unlike human kids, a human can tell you exactly what's going on with them. They can point to a part in their body. They can describe stuff for you. Unfortunately, dogs can't really do that. Can't be articulate as kids. So I guess generally, what are the things we like to look out for when dogs? What are the things that we should sort of always you know, try to look out for, just to make sure that our beloved dogs are always healthy.
I think that's one of the challenges about being a vet as well. You know, they can't actually tell us what's wrong with them. So a lot of the times we have to rely on the owners to tell us what's wrong with them. So as an owner, you would know your dog best. And a couple of things to look out for would be, how's their appetite? You know, are they eating the same amount? Are they eating a lot less? How long has that been going on for? Do they take a longer time to finish their food? Do they seem to have troubles when they're eating their food? Another thing would be their energy levels. Are they as keen to go for the walks as last time? Do they seem to get more tired more easily? And what are they like at home as well? Because sometimes when they're in the clinic, they seem to look okay. But then when they're at home, you know, that they might be lethargic, which is their usual selves. Other obvious signs of illnesses would be things like, are they coughing? Are they sneezing? Do they have any vomiting or diarrhea? Urination problems, skin problems, are they scratching a lot? Do they have a lot of sores or rashes on themselves? Ear problems as well, you know, is there stuff coming out of the ears? Do they seem painful when you try and touch or clean their ears? So a lot of the times we rely on the owners to tell us what's wrong, and those are, I guess, the common things that you can watch out for.
So a couple of things there. It sounds like one of the early indicators is basically their eating habits.
For a dog, sometimes it can be if they really, really like their food.
I mean, I guess for a dog, because dogs are sort of in the state of like always being ready for food, right?
Yes.
So that's kind of an early indicator.
So that would be common for like the large breeds of dogs, like, you know, Labradors. They love their food. They're always hungry. So if you notice that they're not as keen, then those could be one of the early signs. For smaller dogs who are a bit picky on their food, it might be a little bit more difficult. But I guess if you feed them, you know, once, twice a day, you'll be quite familiar with the enthusiasm for the food and how quickly they're able to finish their food up as well.
Terry, any of your dogs ever display any kind of, you know, hesitance or any kind of lack of interest in food?
Never. You know, the Mitsudas are so food motivated. But, you know, just last night, one of my dog, Raz, had a loud scream in the middle of the night. I think he was in pain, but we couldn't figure out what's wrong with him. So
we
are thinking of bringing him to see a vet this weekend, tomorrow. Yeah.
So for stuff like that, so sometimes they'll kind of display something and then it seems to go away. I guess, you know, it could have been nothing. It could be something at that particular moment. Is it sort of like, I guess it's kind of like if the signs continue more, you know, for a period of time, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the thing that you have to look out for.
I guess the important thing is it just a once-off or does it keep happening over and over again? If you can find the source of pain or discomfort at home, that would help quite a bit with the vet as well in order to help them direct their attentions to where they should be, you know, investigating. But, you know, if it's a once-off and your pet seems like completely fine after that, then you can just monitor for a little bit more.
I used to have the situation where, just, you know, coming back to the appetite as a symptom, you know, where my Mac, there was a period where, you know, he was super picky about his food. You know, we used to get really worried because he would just refuse to eat anything for like sometimes 2 days in a row. But it didn't impact anything else. Like, he was still enthusiastic about walking. He didn't seem lethargic or anything like that.
Yeah, so it depends on the dog as well. So some dogs are picky from young. And, you know, you can try rotating their food. You can try a lot of different things. But they're just, you know, that's just the way they are. But if, you know, they're still growing well and they're still, you know, got really good energy levels, then it might just be them. But if you know your dog has always loved food and suddenly it's not as you know, enthusiastic about it, then that would be an early indication that something might be up.
Do dogs get fevers?
They can get fevers. Dogs normally are warmer than us anyway, so they will feel warm. But if you notice your dog's even warmer than usual, then that might be an indication. But the only way to really sort of tell accurately is to, you know, put a thermometer up their bum, which some owners they do. Most people don't feel as comfortable doing it.
Something that always surprises me, at least with other dog owners, is that it's somehow not that, it's not uncommon for dogs to be overweight. Because I guess, you know, people like to spoil them, and or they don't get enough exercise or something. I mean, I suppose just like with human kids, that's like one big important thing, right?
Yep. So weight is definitely one of the things that we struggle with, you know, with regards to advising pet owners, or, you know, your dog is actually overweight, I think you should do something about it. Because, you know, to a lot of people, you know, a fat dog means a happy dog. They've been feeding them well. But, you know, like in humans, dogs that are overweight are prone to a lot more problems as well. So things like diabetes, heart problems, joint problems, just general energy levels. So all that can impact a dog as well. So it is important to keep them on the lean side. And other things would be, you know, feeding them a good quality diet, regular exercise. So for larger dogs, they may need, you know, 2-3 hours of exercise a day. For smaller dogs, maybe not so much. Teeth brushing is something that I think a lot of people aren't as aware of. But, you know, like in humans, you know, we brush our teeth 2 or more times a day. So ideally in dogs, you should brush your teeth at least once a day as well. You know, other things would be being up to date with their vaccinations, their preventatives for parasites, and getting regular vet checks as well.
Not every dog is easy to have to brush their teeth, right? And it's also not unusual for dogs over time, and when I say over time, I mean years, to develop plaque or that on their teeth. So I recently discovered that, you know, with some dogs, the only way to remove buildup, you know, plaque that's built up, is basically to put them to sleep for a while and then have the vet clean them.
Yep.
But I discovered that dogs of a certain temperament will actually allow you to almost do whatever you want with their teeth, and they're fine.
I think as a vet, I recommend, you know, a dental procedure under general anesthetic, because a lot of the time, the types of problems with the teeth aren't actually that obvious from the outside.
Right.
In the ideal world, you're meant to, you know, take x-rays of the teeth. A lot of the problems are, you know, underneath the gum line that you can't see. And to do a proper kind of examination and cleaning of the teeth, you would, you know, have to do it while they're sleeping, because it's quite difficult with the equipment the noise makes, the dental equipment makes as well, to really do a thorough job if they're, you know, awake. Unless, and I know some dogs have very good temperaments, but it's still quite difficult to get the inside of the teeth, for example, not just the outside.
And I guess there's some things that, you know, unless you're a unless you're a properly trained veterinarian, that there are just things that you won't see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. I have a question for Cam, though.
Sure.
What is your take on dogs who are senior? Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, we've been reading articles where they say it's not safe to put dogs under GA, right? So that's where...
When they're older.
Yeah, and some specialists or some shops, they offer services where you can scale teeth without, you know, GA. Well, what is your take on that?
There is definitely a risk to put your pet under general anesthetic, you know, whether they're young or whether they're old. Definitely when they're older, there's an increased risk as well. But that's where, you know, you do things like pre-anesthetic blood tests to make sure they don't have any other problems beforehand. Get the vet to check them over first. There are services that offer non-dental scaling without anesthetic. Usually a lot of the times that just involves cleaning what you can see on the outside. So, and it's a bit difficult to explain without showing pictures of these things. But, you know, you can make the tooth look clean on the outside, but, you know, what goes on underneath, you know, might be a different story altogether. So there, I will acknowledge there are risks involved. We try and minimize the risk as much as possible. And I always tell owners, you know, yes, if your pet's, you know, 11 or 12 and you're a bit concerned about it, you know, dental disease does progress as they get older. So, you know, your pet could be 15, 16, you know, in a couple of years' time, the teeth will probably be worse. And then it's definitely a lot higher risk at that point in time as well.
I guess that's the obvious question. Yeah. It's like, what's the risk of inaction, right? What's the risk of not doing anything there?
Yeah, so dental disease, you know, has risk in itself. So the fact that there's so much bacteria in the mouth, the bacteria from the mouth can actually spread to other parts of the body. You know, it can lodge in the heart and the lungs and organs, and then it, you know, just seeds bacteria in other parts and causes infection of those body parts. Also, you know, the fact that the tooth is rotten, a lot of the times when I see the patients, that in itself causes a lot of pain. So the animal themselves may not show that they're in pain, but if you had a rotten tooth, like if anyone has had a toothache before, you know, just one tooth is already so painful, and you know, you have to rush to the dentist and get the tooth out. So imagine if your whole mouth was like that.
Right.
And dogs are very resilient. You know, they could still be eating and not show any signs of being in discomfort, but You know, if you imagine your whole mouth just being painful and just constantly having to do eat every day like that, that's quite a big thing for the dog as well. So we've had some owners that find, you know, once their pet has undergone a dental, we've pulled out the affected teeth or cleaned things up, then, you know, they're actually a lot happier after that. And they just never noticed it because, you know, the dog's just been in that state for such a long time.
Right. So on the topic of eating, there's kind of, I see with different owners, there's kind of two schools of thought. One is you keep food out all the time, and usually that's, you know, that's in the form of dry food or something that you can just sort of leave out, and the dog just eats whenever they're hungry. And the other is fixed eating schedules, like fixed meal times. I'm in the school of the latter. Also because we give our dogs wet food, right? So you can't leave them out anyway. Yeah. But that's sort of my rationale is that, well, you know, people have fixed eating times, you know, plus, you know, regular walking time and all of that. It's better at keeping them, you know, controlling their weight. But I'd love to hear the professional opinion.
I think for that, it depends a lot on the owner's schedule and on a lot of the dog's temperament as well. So dogs aren't known to be grazers as much as cats are. So having fixed, you know, eating times is fine unless someone is around all day to kind of, you know, clear the food whenever the dog finishes it. I think it also depends if they're mostly on dry food or wet food or like home cooked food or raw food. You know, these things, obviously with dry food, you can leave it out a bit longer. But with everything else, it's probably best if they eat it, you know, on the spot rather than leave it out for the whole day, because then you might get like bacterial contamination and that could cause other issues as well. So I don't think there's one hard and fast rule because every dog and every household is a bit different. But, you know, do what suits your family structure, you know, your schedule as well, and what the dog is willing to kind of, you know, accept.
Is there a recommendation over wet versus dry food? Pros and cons?
I think they both have their benefits. So with dry food, we recommend it because it actually does, you know, help to in keeping the teeth clean as well as the dogs are chewing it. With wet food, you know, it's high water content. So some certain, you know, medical conditions may require more of a wet food than the dry food diet. So it's up to the dog's preference as well and the owner's preference.
So many customers ask us how many meals to feed a day. Is there a recommendation, or again, is, you know, up to your lifestyle or preferences?
Yeah, I think it's up. It's not so much the number of meals, but how much they eat in a whole day. So you calculate how much your pet needs for the whole day. You can divide it into one, you know, three small meals. But I think maybe twice a day would be a good start, because with once a day, you know, your dog feels full for like a couple of hours, and then it's, you know, might go hungry after that as well. So I think twice a day is generally a good recommendation.
Want us to answer a question for you here on the Good Dog People podcast? Write us at hello@gooddogpeople.com and send us your questions, comments, or suggestions. And please remember to write podcast in the subject header. Now, VetPal has a bit of a unique business model, right, compared to a lot of veterinary practices. So Kelvin, tell us more about that.
Well, yeah. So Cam is our vet, but we don't have a clinic. The reason for that is our veterinary team, which includes Cam as well, they go to your home.
Okay, so house calls.
Exactly. It's we are the first and only full-time house call business out there in Singapore. But we're really trying to change the way that pet care is delivered for pets and their owners. Yeah.
So what's the idea behind that? Is that really mainly to address the convenience from a customer point of view?
I think convenience is a huge part of what we offer. More importantly, it's the comfort that a pet has in its own home.
Right.
Right. So all of us, we own dogs or we have owned dogs. And for myself especially, if I didn't have a car, I wouldn't know how to get my dog to the clinic, right? But now we have a medical team that goes to your home. So that is the owner convenience part. For the pet, so if I took my golden retriever, for example, he had a lot of joint problems and mobility issues. So for that matter, getting him to the clinic was a huge pain for myself as well as him.
A bit of an operation, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think as we transition into this new age. A lot of pet owners are demanding a lot of convenience. A lot of them don't drive. They work long hours. And what we really grant our customers is access to medical care when they need it, right? So our operating hours, our last appointment is at 9 p.m. and we show up at your doorstep. You don't have to pack up from work late and yet make an additional trip to the vet clinic.
Right. I mean, you know, speaking for myself, right? When there's something wrong with the dog, it kind of upends your whole day, right?
It's absolutely. Like,
you know, you basically have to. I mean, it's really like we don't have kids, but it's basically like what I imagine having kids is like, is that, you know, you just cancel all your meetings and like, no, I have to go because there's something wrong with my dog and I got to take the dog to the vet.
I guess that's true, but there's also that aspect where you aren't sure what to do. You just think that there's something wrong with your pet. And that goes back to the beginning of the podcast where a lot of us as pet owners, we aren't sure what's the proper way to care for your dental health,
right,
for example, or how much to feed your pet, because
right,
none of us are educated that way.
Right.
Right. What VetPal does is we also grant you WhatsApp access to the medical team.
Okay.
Right. So if at 8 p.m. you aren't sure if you should be going to a hospital or to the 24-hour clinic, you can just drop us a WhatsApp and the medical team will sort you out.
Okay.
This is a service that we don't charge for, but what it really offers is a bit of clarity from a medical perspective on what's the next best steps to take to ensure your pet gets the best care.
I guess the other sort of psychological thing is that, you know, when you think or when you start to suspect that there's something wrong with your dog, you go through this kind of process of like, do I take him now or do I wait until tomorrow and see if it's still there? Or, you know, and then, you know, you always go through this kind of elimination process of like, okay, it's been 2 days. Do I take him now? Because, you know, it's hard for people to rearrange their days, right? It's hard for people to just move stuff off their schedule.
Absolutely. So if we get cases like that, a lot of the times the vets will request for videos or photos through WhatsApp, which is really convenient. And from there, we can really point you to, like, what's the next best steps to take, right? Do you wait till the next morning? Do you wait for a couple of days more before you take action and intervene and so on?
So doing a house call versus being at the clinic, who would benefit most from having a house call kind of situation, and are there limitations, are there things that can't be done in that kind of a setting?
So with our house call service, there's actually quite a few things that we can do at home. So I think it benefits the clients with, you know, multiple pets. You know, sometimes they've got like 5 cats and 2 dogs, and just bringing all of them into the clinic at once is quite a bit of a task, or they have to do it over multiple trips, you know, which is a lot of back and forth, and it stresses the pet out as well. So if you've got multiple pets, if you know your pet is easily stressed at a clinic, you know, certain dogs just don't do well when there's so much noise and things going on around them, then, you know, having someone come over to your house where they're more comfortable is definitely an advantage as well. Sometimes pets aren't really able to move around very well. So if you get the old pets, those with a lot of mobility and joint issues, and it's just difficult to get them into a car and then get them out of the car and just spend a long time waiting, then those ones would benefit as well. Obviously, certain things can't be done at home. We can't do surgeries at home. We can't do x-rays at home. So if we feel that your pet does require those services, then we do actually recommend that you go to a vet clinic. But you can feel free to ask us, you know, what, you know, we can and we can't do, and we'll advise according to your pet's medical problem as well.
What about dogs who just aren't very sociable? I mean, there are people that I see every now and then at the clinic where there'll be a dog that's just particularly more aggressive against other dogs.
So if you know your pet's like that, you know, in a clinic setting, then, you know, and if you feel comfortable handling your pet at home, then I think having someone go to your house is a lot less stressful for them, a lot less stressful for you as well. For us to just go over, you know, check your pet out and give whatever treatment is necessary.
Okay. What about medication though, right? Because obviously if the house call is happening, you probably wouldn't know beforehand what the dog needs, or you know, or let's just say another situation where maybe you're just replenishing medication or something like that. I mean, you know, Terry, as an online retailer for pet supplies, for dog supplies, is it conceivable that someday there might be like an online pharmacy for dogs?
Absolutely. I mean, we have so many queries about do we have prescription diets? Do we have medicated treatments for flea and tick? We get it all the time. So I think it's very likely we will launch a service like a digital pharmacy. Mm-hmm. I think it's big in US. It should come in Asia very soon.
Yeah, I think that's it's just the way that the market is moving, where a consumer has demands, and these demands can be met with certain companies. But like as Terry said, there's online pharmacies that are operating in the US, in the UK, as well as Australia, and they're pretty big. But it's really changing the way how prescription meds are delivered and ordered in the first place.
But they don't exist yet in Singapore?
Not to our knowledge.
Well, you guys could be the first.
Why not?
Why not, right?
You see, as a pet owner, I get frustrated when I have to make appointments with the vets. You know, the premise of the clinic is not big in the first place. It gets stressful bringing the dogs to the clinic. So I think that's one motivation that we will try to make this happen.
Yeah, well, I guess for me too, speaking from as a dog owner, right? Sometimes there's just, you know, it's just the case of stuff that you have to replenish, right? It doesn't have to, you don't need a new diagnosis. You just want to continue carrying on, you know, same resupplying.
Medication. Yeah.
So sign of the times, I guess. I mean, you know, if every other sector, from dining to online shopping and fashion and all of that, is all going online, I guess it's just sort of the next logical step.
Yep, I think that's a modern standard that the vet industry can move toward. So even for myself, I came from human healthcare. Mm. And stepping into the animal health domain was like stepping back in time somewhat. Mm. Mm. So, yeah.
Okay, so the other reason why we wanted to bring some expert advice into this pilot episode is because at the time of this recording, we are all neck deep, about 2 months into what I suppose history will remember as the coronavirus crisis that everybody in the world is facing. In other media, it's hard to talk about anything else, but because we're, you know, this is a podcast dedicated to dogs, I just had to bring up this question. Now, I think, was it a few weeks ago or a couple of weeks ago, there was a story that I remember reading about a case in Hong Kong where a person had come down with the coronavirus and his dog also, quote unquote, tested positive. And it led to this, you know, kind of, it was a story that went kind of viral. Some people got concerned. And then there are these horrible, you know, rumors or stories, don't really know how accurate they were, about, you know, suddenly pets being abandoned, or even worse, you know, dogs being thrown out the window because all of a sudden people were afraid of catching the coronavirus from their pets. And enlighten us, Cam. I mean, you know, what's really going on here? What's the story?
So it's been a couple of weeks since all that has happened, since the first article. So we do have a bit more information now than we did a couple of weeks ago. So from my understanding, yes, the owner had tested positive for the coronavirus. And so the dog was actually placed in quarantine, and they took some samples from the nose, from the mouth, from the rectum, and from the stools as well. And the samples from the nose and the mouth were the ones that came back as a positive. And so initially they thought maybe it was just contamination. But after, you know, a few days, and they took subsequent samples in quarantine, the dog still continued to test positive. And so The dog didn't actually exhibit any signs related to the coronavirus during this time.
Let's just clarify that. So the dog wasn't sick from the coronavirus.
The dog wasn't sick from the coronavirus.
The dogs actually can't get sick from the same coronavirus.
Dogs have their own coronavirus, but it doesn't cause the same like respiratory symptoms as it does in humans. And so after a couple of weeks in quarantine, they continued testing the dog quite regularly. And the dog actually had, a couple of negative samples. And so once it finished the quarantine period, the dog was actually returned back to the owner. And the place was, disinfected and everything like that. So recently, a couple of days ago, it was found that the owner had reported that the dog had actually, passed away 3 days after being released from quarantine. And so that was a little bit of a worry. But, considering the dog was 17 years old and it had other pre-existing illnesses as well, so the authorities don't actually think it was, coronavirus that contributed to the dog's death, because the dog never actually showed any signs related to it.
Now, I remember distinctly the health minister of Singapore was in one of the press conferences, said they do not see the spread of coronavirus from dogs as a vector to be worried about. For us laymen, what does that mean?
So, if we look at how coronavirus is spread from what they know at the moment, it seems to be spread through like contact with an infected person's like bodily secretions, so such as like saliva or mucus. So if they cough or sneeze and these secretions touch a surface, then, and we happen to touch that surface as well, then, that's how it's usually spread to someone else. So our pet's fur is a lot more porous than, like, say, a tabletop or a doorknob. And so, the virus is less likely to kind of just remain on the surface. And so in that sense, we're less likely to actually contract it from our pet or anything like that. In fact, it seems to be the other way around. It seems to be we as the humans passing it on to our pets instead of the other way around. So there is an organization called the World Organization for Animal Health, which is an intergovernmental organization that supports disease control. And they have said that, based on the case in Hong Kong, it does look like there was transmission from human to animal, but it doesn't look like there's been no reports of animal to human transmission.
So bottom line, I guess, if anybody listening to this or if any one of us has friends who tell us, hey, I heard that, somebody in Hong Kong got the coronavirus from his pet dog, we should immediately correct that and tell him that, no, that's not the way it worked at all.
At the moment, it doesn't seem like there's any transmission from the dog to the human. It is possible the other way around. And I don't think that's sort of reason for people to start, abandoning their dogs, as what they've seen in Hong Kong, There's been more reports of that happening as well.
So I read somebody had commented, like, because, as you said, like, say, if somebody sneezes and some of those, vapor droplets land on a dog, it could be possible, but in that way, it's like...
anything is possible. It is less likely than...
So that makes a dog no more infectious than, say, a tabletop or a doorknob, right?
Yeah. In fact, it might be less so because... like I said, the fur of the dog is quite porous, so the virus doesn't tend to kind of stay on the surface for as long a time.
You know how they do these tests where they test how long the virus lives on metal surfaces, on plastic, and they compare it to cardboard and da da da. Maybe we should ask them to do that for pets.
Yeah, if they have the resources, they're more than welcome to just do it, because we don't have enough evidence
we don't have enough research on that.
Yeah.
Are there any precautions that dog owners should take, if at all, during this time of global pandemic? Vis-a-vis our dogs?
Yeah, I think similar to, the precautions that we've been taking, human to human. So good personal hygiene before and after handling your pet. So just wash your hands thoroughly and try to minimize contact with them in your face. Like, if they like to lick your face, your mouth, if they like to play bite, try and minimize that during this time as well. Try to ensure that your pet's bedding, their feeding bowls are kept clean, and monitor your own health as well, as it appears that, humans might be able to spread it to dogs at this current time. And also, if you're feeling unwell and you do need to go to like a vet clinic, just try and let the vet staff know beforehand so that they can make the necessary arrangements for you to make sure that your pet still gets the medical attention that it needs, but minimizing your contact with the veterinary staff as well.
Well, this has been certainly enlightening for me. I think I learned a lot today. I want to thank our guests, Cam and Calvin, from VetPal, to tell us about to tell us all about taking care of dogs, and clarifying all of that stuff about dogs and the coronavirus. Listen, something that we really want to do with this with the Good Dog People podcast is get you the listeners interaction. So, Terry, why don't you tell the listeners how they can send us questions?
Well, if you see this in social media or, you know, or email us, feel free to pop a question, send it to hello@goododdpeople.com. We will consolidate the questions and, you know, and probably post it as snippets of fun facts or responses on our social media. Yeah, so, you know, we've been trying to do workshops and events to build a community. So this podcast is really an extension of what we have always been doing. So, you know, we depend on everyone's contribution of content. Even on Hey Vet, where we have a Q&A section, is really to encourage everyone to ask questions and support each other through knowledge sharing.
Okay, and we'd love to get your ideas. And there's anywhere we can improve the podcast or what else? You know, what else you'd like to see, what other guests you'd like us to have on the show. So once again, thank you to our guests, and thank you everyone for joining us on this pilot episode of the Good Dog People podcast.
Subscribe to the Good Dog People podcast to get more tips and expert advice on how to take care of your beloved dog. The Good Dog People podcast is a production of Timberwolf Media.